talking some Red Sox baseball as we're joined on the G&M Family Market phone line by our friend Tim Britton of the Providence Journal. Tim, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Rich. How's it going?
Doing great. Before we get to the Red Sox, though, let's talk a little basketball. You were covering the regionals in Providence. You saw some good basketball there.
Yes, I think four pretty tight games. The biggest margin was Wichita State as an 11 beating Arizona. So it's good to get back to my basketball roots. It's been a little while since I covered it.
And Providence Friars, exciting game, one-point victory. But, boy, it's such a fun team, and I think they've sort of captured the hearts of the New Englanders here, not just the folks in Rhode Island.
Well, yeah, and they've been working toward it for a couple of years. You go back to Bryce Cotton 2 years ago against North Carolina, coming so close in that first-round game last year. Disappointing performance against Dayton, and this year, too. I know they had a few chances right at the end of that game to finally come through at the last possible second there with Rodney Bullock. You've got guys in Chris Dunn and Ben Bentel, as good a two-man group as Providence has had in a long time. They've been a really fun team to watch, and we'll see what they can do against Carolina again tomorrow night, I guess.
All right, on to the Red Sox. Eduardo Rodriguez, official, we all suspected he won't be ready for the start of the regular season. Henry Owens, in his most recent audition for the job, didn't look very good. So are there already concerns about holes in this Red Sox rotation?
Well, I think there were concerns about it before spring training started. But, we had talked a lot in the offseason, even after they got David Price, about who was going to be the number two starter, how it was going to go kind of the rest of that rotation. And then Rodriguez was the guy you would hope would step up to that after the strong rookie season he had. But, he just has, the injury early in camp before games started. So we haven't seen him really off a mound much at all this spring. He's trying to work his way back to that now. But it's going to be a little while until he's ready to pitch in a major league game in the month of April. Owens, he's had bad springs in the past. And this is another one where it just doesn't seem like he's able to locate his fastball with the consistency that he needs. So when you're looking at replacing Rodriguez, I would have said that Owens had the inside track. I don't think he does anymore. Rowenis Elias pitched pretty well today. I think he was in Port Charlotte with the split squad. And Stephen Wright has probably been the one guy in the rotation who's pitched well every time he's gone out there this spring. And maybe, when you're looking at how you're going to form that 12-man pitching staff, Wright's a guy who's out of options. So he had an inside track on an opening day spot, presumably in the bullpen at the start of spring. Maybe now you say, okay, we'll plug right into the rotation. Maybe make Elias a left-handed reliever. Matt Barnes had a really nice spring as a reliever. So we've got a couple different options. They've got some flexibility there, but none of them, the ideal option is Rodriguez being healthy, and that's not the case.
Tim, what do you make of the move of Xander Bogaerts into that cleanup spot? Is this a full-time thing, or is it something designed to break up the run of righties at the top of the lineup? What's your take?
There's a couple different reasons to do it. Bogaerts is not really your prototypical number four hitter. He's not even really your prototypical number three hitter. What he hit, 7 or 8 home runs last year?
Yeah.
But when you've got a top of the order that's probably going to be best in Pedroia 1 and 2, you like the idea of getting David Ortiz an at-bat in the first inning. You break up those righties a little bit. That said, John Farrell said today that he's probably going to go back against that. You'll put Bogaerts back in the number three spot because it seems like he's more comfortable there. I know Pedroia has talked a little bit about it's a little easier to be aggressive on the base pass, maybe swipe a bag or two when you're hitting in front of Bogaerts rather than hitting in front of Ortiz, who you want to keep that hole open on the right side. So if I'm guessing, I think the opening day lineup is probably best Pedroia, Bogaerts, Ortiz. But we talk about the lineup so much this time of year, and then it really becomes malleable as the season goes on. And, we saw the way Bogaerts climbed up the lineup. He was hitting 8th in front of the pitcher on the second day of the season last year, and he was the number 3 hitter by the second half of the season. So I assume that will change at some point over the course of the season. The good thing is they have guys with some flexibility to hit in a few different spots in that order.
Tim Britton of the Providence Journal joining us here on Downtown. Now, much of the offseason, fans spent their time wringing their hands at the prospect of Hanley Ramirez at first, but it seems like there's been a shift here in the last week or two that most of the focus on bad contracts and underperformance has shifted over to the opposite side of the infield and Pablo Sandoval.
I when you started that question, I thought we were going to go with the good news that Ramirez has looked good at first base, and it's been a pleasant surprise. And we're going to the negative side, which I understand with the way that Pablo Sandoval has played. He made another error today. That's 4 errors in spring. And when you look at Sandoval, you can almost take a guy not hitting well. It happens to guys. You, you go through slumps offensively, and Sandoval, when the Red Sox signed him, his numbers have gotten worse 3 straight years. He made it 4 straight last year. So you saw that decline kind of built in a little bit. But he obviously went further down than you would expect offensively. But, you know, you could handle that as long as he was playing pretty good defense at third, which he had done throughout his career. But last year he was the worst defender at third in baseball. He's looked the same this spring where, you know, those balls he has to charge in, those, you know, those choppers to third, that's where he's really struggled. That's the error he made today. It was on a ball like that. He made the play, and then the throw got away from him. And we've seen that a lot from him. And, you know, I think you'll see teams start to challenge him in that regard, maybe putting some bunts down to third over the course of the season. And, you know, whereas with Ramirez, you say, okay, if he can't handle first, this year there's no other spot for him. But you've got a long-term plan for him. He can be David Ortiz's replacement at DH. If Sandoval can't handle third, you start to think about, you know, where's he going to play long-term? And, you know, maybe first base next year. But at that point, you know, his offense isn't good enough for first base. It's barely good enough for third, the way he's been hit in the last couple of years. You really start to wonder where he fits on this roster long-term.
Alan Craig is starting to look like he did a couple of seasons back. Is there any chance that the Sox actually figure out a way to send him to another city and maybe get something in return for him, to a first base needy team like the White Sox?
You know, I don't know. There's so much money left on that contract, $21 million. He's been a shell of his old self for 2 years. I don't know that there's a team that's going to see spring training results. You know, if Alan Craig hits 1,000 with 10 home runs in spring training, I'm not sure that there's a team that's going to trade for him without you needing to take on a significant amount of that money. So it's good that he's looking good. He's been tinkering with his mechanics so much the last couple of years to try to rediscover that timing that he lost, really dating back to that foot injury in 2013, that, you know, maybe there's a team that would take a low-risk move on him, a low-risk chance on him, if the Red Sox are willing to pay a fair amount of that salary, you know, $15 million or more probably. But I think it's probably going to take more than just a decent spring for him to do that. It's going to have to take him probably starting the year in AAA and showing that he can hit for power in AAA in a way he didn't last year.
Tim, with Torrey Lovello kind of looking over his shoulder and waiting in the wings, is it important for John Farrell that this team get off to a good start?
Yeah, you know, I think we talk about the importance of a good start every year, and, you know, a lot of times it's kind of lip service. Like, you know, everyone needs a good start. This year it does seem particularly important for a Red Sox team that's coming off consecutive last-place finishes. We've got a manager whose job is a little bit under fire after two last-place finishes, and then you throw in the fact that the team looked better under Lovello down the stretch of last season than it did under Farrell the first 4.5 months. That just adds another layer of urgency. And Farrell has used that word to describe how he's going to manage this year, maybe with a little bit more urgency. Last year, he expressed patience with the struggles of guys like Ramirez and Sandoval, kind of going back, you know, they've got the track record to succeed. I don't know if he's got that luxury of patience this year, because if this team is, you know, 12 and 18 out of the blocks or 20 and 30 in May, I don't know how much, you know, if Farrell has the leeway to go through that.
As you look at the Eastern Division and who's helped themselves in the offseason, is it a truly wide-open five-teams-anybody-can-win-it race, or are there maybe two or three teams that are a little bit better than the rest?
You know, I wouldn't, you know, it's not like a five-team toss-up. I think the Orioles, when you look at these five teams, each of them has a significant weakness, and you kind of look at what is the best strength for any individual team and what is the worst weakness. I think the Orioles' rotation is the worst weakness. That's the one thing that I have a hard time seeing a team being able to overcome over the course of the season. When you look at it, the greatest strength is probably the Toronto offense, which should be every bit as good as it was last year when, compared to the rest of the league, it was as good an offense as we've seen in Major League Baseball in a really long time. So that's why I would probably pick Toronto ahead of everyone else. You know, it's kind of the recency bias. You go for the incumbent. I think Baltimore to win last year because they had won it the year before. But I see Toronto as probably the marginal favorite. And then the Yankees and Red Sox, I think, are next in line behind them. They each have their flaws. The Yankees have to rely on so much age. The Red Sox have the rotation questions we've been talking about. The Rays have offensive questions. What can Evan Longoria provide for them in the middle of the order? Every team has its weakness. You know, the Blue Jays have rotation questions every bit as large as the Red Sox, if not larger. So that's what makes it interesting in this division, is there's no 114-win Yankees the way there was in 1998 or the way the Yankees and Red Sox, you know, I think they averaged 96 wins in that 2000s decade or around that. So those teams don't exist in this division the way they used to, and that makes it a lot flatter for everyone.
Tim, this story out of Chicago has been so interesting to follow this week, involving Adam LaRoche and his son. The Red Sox, it seems, have a fairly progressive, I guess, open policy about having kids around the team. What's your perspective on the Red Sox compared to other teams in Major League Baseball when it comes to family being around and involved?
You know, I haven't spent enough time in other teams' home clubhouses to get a sense of how often kids are in there. The Red Sox, you know, we've seen Dustin Pedroia's kids, John Lester's kids, Koji Uehara's son is there all the time, David Ortiz's son. You know, Victor Martinez Jr. was there with Terry Francona all the time. When Martinez came back with the Tigers a couple years ago, Francona was like, I don't care about seeing him, I want to see little Victor. they've been pretty open in that regard. You know, I don't think it hasn't been on like a daily basis the way it sounds like it is with LaRoche and his son in Chicago, but I've never heard a Red Sox player complain about it. It seems, you know, from the outside, obviously, it seems like something that the players would like to patrol, the players and the manager. And it sounds like that's what upset the order a little bit in Chicago, mm-hmm. is that it was someone from higher up who doesn't spend every day in the clubhouse who was taking issue with it. So we'll see how it plays out. It's certainly interesting to monitor from afar. Boston hasn't had that issue, and it's actually interesting. We've seen a lot of Dave Dombrowski's son on the campus in Fort Myers, and Jeff Glue kind of hanging out with the guys in the clubhouse, and it doesn't seem like that causes a problem at all.
Tim Britton of the Providence Journal. Tim, always great talking with you. Thanks for making time for us, and go Friars. We'll be cheering from up here.
Oh, anytime. Thank you.
Tim Britton talking Red Sox with us on Downtown. Our Red Sox reports brought to you every day by Gagan's, the Tasting Room, open at 34 Abbott Street in Brewer right now up until 9 o'clock tonight and Saturday from 12 to 7. 8 rotating lines, get your growlers filled. Ask about joining that growler club when you're there as well. Sample brews and pick up limited Gagan Brothers Brewing merchandise at Gagan's Tasting Room, 34 Abbott Street in Brewer, 16 after 5 o'clock on Downtown. Still to come, Joe Riccio's back. Another edition of Shut Up and Eat. Danny Cashman of The Night Show, The Good, Bad, and Ugly. We'll update you on Downtown Madness as well. And if you missed it earlier, the big news, Downtown growing. Starting April 4th, Downtown expands to 3 hours every afternoon, 3 to 6, beginning on the 4th of April, right here on the Pulse WZON.